We're joined by our friend, our pal, our buddy from The Athletic, Eric DeHatchuk. Mr. DeHatchuk, how do we find you today?
Excellent, excellent. I've got the Winnipeg-Minnesota pregame show on. I'm interested on in that game for a couple of reasons. One, the Wild is here, of course, tomorrow, so I wanted to see what they look like. I haven't watched them much this year. And two, I haven't been able to get a really good read on Winnipeg yet this year. And every time Steve Mason goes in, you know, they lose, they get blown up, and the explanation afterwards is it isn't all Steve Mason's fault. But Hellebuck has gone in and looked pretty good, you know, the times that I've seen him play. So I'm very interested in seeing. They're in a very lax part of their schedule. I think they play today and then they'll play again for another 5 days. So they've had lots of time to rest. They should be firing on all cylinders, even though Matthew Perreault is not in the lineup. To me, it's a really important test for Winnipeg. I mean, Minnesota's not off to this great start. They're slowly getting a little bit healthier. So I want to see where the Jets are at. And if Steve Mason is becoming a scapegoat, because I know Al Morganti wants to talk about that, or if they are just legitimately two different teams and that they have more confidence in the one goalie than the other. So that's what I'll be doing for the next 2.5 hours.
Goalies are an interesting story here early on in the season. I mean, I suppose they are in every season, but we've got hot ones, we've got cold ones, and now we have injured ones. Mm-hmm. With three teams missing their starting goalies, with the news today that Corey Schneider is out for the New Jersey Devils.
Yes. Well,
no, I just, you know, more, I guess, first of all, I mean, the Devils off to this great start. I guess I should ask a question. But, you know, Schneider's out, Fleury's out, Rask is out. I mean, here early on, already goalies are taking up the spotlight.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, let's talk about Schneider first, because I think I think his bounce back is so critical in terms of what's going on in New Jersey. I mean, those young kids that they've got in the lineup are exciting, and I get why people are paying attention to New Jersey. You know, on a much bigger scale, that's what happened in Toronto last year. You know, Toronto put three young, really good players into the lineup, and they made a difference. And you know, Hischier having a big game finally last night was important, and Butcher's been a good player for them, and I'm pretty sure that Jesper Bratt is going to sort of come back to the mean. But nevertheless, I mean, they have exciting young players and veterans that have something to prove. But, you know, if you look at Corey Schneider's record, and I looked it up today because I did a notebook item on him, you know, the first 6 years in the NHL, I mean, he was one of the best goals against slash save percentage goalies. It didn't matter if he was in New Jersey or Vancouver. You know, in 6 years, he didn't have a GAA over 2.23, and then last year it just ballooned. You know, it was 0.6 of a goal higher. I mean, that was not a good team, but one of the reasons they were not a good team was that Schneider wasn't at the level that we were accustomed to seeing him at. Like, he was just, to me, up until the start of last year, he was one of the most underrated goaltenders in the National Hockey League. So, you know, what happened last year? Did he get worse? Was it just one of those years where it just wasn't his year? And based on the start of this year, that's how you'd have to say it. I mean, people are entitled to bad years. Anže Kopitar had a bad year. He's having a better year this year. So I really thought that as important as all those other factors were in New Jersey, it was critical that this guy, an elite-level goaltender, was giving them elite-level goaltending. And so Keith Kincaid, I think, is a serviceable backup, and I think that in the past he's shown that he can go in and play up to, you know, 20 to 25 games a year, and some nights he's better than others. But you know, he's a professional, but there is a difference between what the level of goaltending that he can provide and the level of goaltending that Schneider can provide. So I'm very interested to see if Schneider's absence, if it's for any length of time, and obviously if he's on IR, it's going to be a little while, if New Jersey can keep at this early season pace. You know, Vegas, I mean, you know, they are just exceeding everyone's expectations. Mm-hmm. And Malcolm Subban, I saw Subban play his first game live, and then I was watching a fair bit of the game the other night where, you know, it looked as if Vegas was on the ropes and they were about to give the game away, and then David Perron won in overtime for them. And so, you know, it just seems that everything is kind of clicking into place for them, and I'm not sure that they can necessarily survive an extended absence for Fleury. But when I left there on Monday, they were talking about it being short term, and they were hopeful that you know, that because he's had concussions before, they were I think they were being really cautious, but they were hopeful that it was not a serious injury and that he would get back in the lineup fairly soon. So you're right, goaltending has been an interesting story. The number of guys who've got off to great starts, the number of players who've got off to poor starts, and I heard you and Eric having the conversation earlier And I agree with you. I mean, if Mike Smith doesn't play the way he has so far this year for Calgary, yep. then we're having the same conversation here that they were having in Edmonton until they won in Chicago yesterday and took all the pressure off. And he has been that good in my view. And he has been so important in terms of what he's done. And I think the sort of the hopeful part of that is that, you know, as the guys, the players, the position players playing in front of them figure it out and raise their level, if Smith can continue to play at the level that they're at, then things should start to eventually click into place for Calgary.
Well, it's funny because I was thinking when you were talking about Winnipeg and you mentioned Steve Mason that, you know, they keep saying after the bad starts, it's not all him, it's not all him. Well, you know, Glenn Gullitson today talked about the fact that the Flames are really off to the very same start that they had last year, except special teams and the goaltending have been better, except I remember last year we were told it wasn't the goaltending's fault either.
Right, yeah. You have to, part of being a coach, I heard I liked your explanation of it. You know, it's part con man, part psychologist, and I think that is true, and I think that messaging is important, and I think that, you know, the messaging in Winnipeg is that we signed this guy for 2 years and that eventually he is going to come in and win some games for us. So we are not prepared to throw him under the bus. But mm-hmm. in the meantime, especially since we don't have a lot of games coming up, let's go with the guy that has won 3 games in a row and it looked like he's taking that step. I mean, I put Hellebuyck in the same conversation as Murray and Gibson. And I guess it's largely because they were the 3 goalies for Team North America in the World Cup last year. And we were all excited about that. And at the time they were trying to sort out, you know, who's the best of them. I mean, the people that were running the team there liked them all. And so, Murray has won a couple of Stanley Cups and Gibson, I think, is pretty much the undisputed number one there. And then Hellebuyck, you know, won a bunch of games last year, but I don't think that they felt that he had made the same strides as the other two. And then, you know, I'm just reading a little bit about him because I haven't spoken to him myself. But it sounds as if, you know, he changed a little bit in terms of the way he approached the season, and he just seems calmer and older and wiser. And, you know, in the few times that I've watched him, the one thing that always struck me was that he was a guy that would make the initial save and sometimes couldn't find the rebound, you know, and you'd see that all the time. So, you know, if the defense was in a position to clear it away, no harm done. But if he couldn't find it and the opposing forward found it first, it was in the net. And the little bit that I've seen of him, and I have to tell you, the reason I'm watching, he's on my fantasy team, is that he is finding the puck a little bit more, and he's not giving up as many of those sort of second chances that cost him last year. And it's a small sample so far, so I'm not prepared to, you know, to completely endorse that this guy is going to reach the level of the other two young goaltenders that are sort of roughly on par with him. But I do think that if you're Winnipeg, it's a pretty positive sign in the early going.
Eric Dachuk from The Athletic, our guest on the South Street Burger guest hotline. We're about 6 weeks into your visits and your every week, and I have really not come at you with one of my crazy harebrain out of left field theory.
But now you're about to start?
I'm about to start. Because, because I watch, and I know it's one viewing, and I know it's awfully easy to get caught up in counting stats, and they really don't matter. But I'm watching the Carolina Hurricanes last night, and I'm looking at that lineup, and I swear Bill Peters and Ron Francis have jumped the curb and are saying, okay, intimidation's out, fighting is out, we can just build straight speed and skill, and if you're going to come after us, you're going to take penalties, and we'll kill you on the power play. Right. They had all of 4 hits last night. They've had, through 5 games, 64 hits. That's 31 less than Vancouver, who's played one more game, 32 less than Minnesota, who's played, two less games, or two more games. Anyway, I just look at that lineup and I go, I wonder if they're up to something. You know, those big teams we saw in L.A. and Anaheim, those big bruising teams, is it possible that somebody's gone the other direction?
Well, I think that, you know, the recipe you're outlining is what Detroit was doing when everybody else was still playing a hard, heavy-hitting game. Detroit said, we will outskill you and we will take advantage of the fact that you're trying to intimidate us by scoring power play goals and then making you pay that way. But I don't think it's such a harebrained idea because when I was watching them play, and you know me, I've been pumping their tires for not just this year, but even last year. I like the way those defensemen collectively move the puck. I like some of the skill that they've got up front, but But what's the number one line there? You know, like to me, the one line that especially more so in the Edmonton game than in the Calgary game. But I loved Staal and Williams playing with Teravainen. Like Teravainen looks mm-hmm. to me like the guy that, you know, a couple of years ago they picked him up from Chicago. Yep. He was kind of lost in the shuffle there. He was going to come in and be an offensive contributor. Hasn't been, wasn't, and now looks like, you know, has had enough time in the National Hockey League to become like a, I think is going to be an above average player. So I love that line. But, you know, the skill line there, you know, Aho, Lindholm and Rask, you know, those guys, I wanted to like their game last night and didn't really like it that much. It's a little bit too pretty for me right now. And so I wonder if at some point, you know, that they are going to have maybe just a little bit more grit to offset the skill. Because there's no disputing that the skill is really high. But I don't know. I mean, physicality has been a part of this game for a long period of time. And I was not familiar with the stat that you cited, but that is, to me, telling, and it reinforces what my observation was about that game. I watched Aho and Lindholm real closely, and I just want to see more from them. And they were guys that last year, I mean, Aho was in his rookie season, so you understand why there's a bit of a learning curve. They were, both of them were far better in the second half than they were in the first half. And, you know, and I think that there was a part of me that thought these guys should be able to build off of what they accomplished last year and be really good from the get-go. And it's been, you know, I mean, it's early and they haven't played a lot of games, but neither of them in either of the two games that Carolina played really jumped out at me. But Staal and Williams, a couple of old school hardened veterans, really did. They were the guys that I liked the best up front, and I liked Teravainen a lot. And the rest of that group, you know, it's pretty anonymous in the bottom half of the roster. And the other line that they're really counting on, because they're all high draft choices with you know, dazzling skill levels, didn't do it for me last night.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's funny you bring up Detroit, and I'm thinking you're probably referencing kind of the newer generations. But, you know, Pat brought up Chicago. Oh, no, Rob, we've seen this in Chicago. But Chicago, they had Brandon Bolig, or, you know what I mean? They had somebody, even 2-2, and, you know, way back Detroit even had, you know, McCarty and those guys. But that's not, I think, what we're talking. I just look at that lineup last night. I go, something goes sideways. Who's going to do what here?
Yeah.
Right? But it's not that league anymore. It isn't that league anymore.
It isn't that league, but I think that it's that whole nuclear deterrent thing. You know, like you just want to have some element of toughness in your lineup, just to have it. You know, just to have it, yeah. and not to, you know, to have somebody go out there and, you know, break a stick, slap shot style over somebody's head who's pushing around your young skilled forwards. But you know, and that's a completely different thing than what you're talking about, which is, you know, I mean, part of the game of hockey is you separate the opposing player with a legal body check. And you know, there are some people that do that really well in the National Hockey League. And, you know, based on what you've just cited, you know, Carolina isn't even trying to do it that way. They're trying to do it with sticks and forcing them with pressure to, you know, to turn the puck over so that you get possession and away you go. And they have been, even when they weren't very good, they were a good possession team. So I think that this is the game plan. But you wonder sometimes when the pendulum swings if it doesn't swing too far in one direction before it settles in the middle. And maybe at that point where they feel that they go from being a non-playoff team to a playoff contender to a good team that's got a chance, you know, you'll see a little bit more of that in that lineup.
Quickly, before I let you go, I want to avoid just going through your notebook because I'd like people to, you know, subscribe to The Athletic and go see it for themselves. But I do want to just touch on something because it does involve Jerome Iginla. I know there was some news this week that maybe he might be on the radar for Team Canada for an upcoming tournament. What's the latest on Team Canada and Jerome Iginla?
Well, I spoke to Sean Burke, who is the general manager of the Canadian Olympic team. He had spent 10 days in Russia, and then he's back in North America. And he was at a game in Phoenix last night. He was in Los Angeles the day before. And I've known Sean for, you know, forever and ever and ever. And we were just talking a little bit about, I just wanted to ask actually how his trip to Russia went, and we just went on from there. The two things that came through in the conversation, one was that, and he circled back to it a couple of times, which is why I ended up leading my notebook with it, was they are taking these Olympics so seriously in Russia, you can't believe it. He said that, you know, the KHL schedule, I think it concludes on the 28th of January, but it's interesting because the two teams that have all the Olympians, SKA St. Petersburg and CSKA Moscow, they finish on the 23rd and the 24th already. So it's amazing how they are going to, you know, and what they've done is they've basically placed all of the Olympians on those two teams, and they're all kind of playing together. So not only will they have like a, you know, an 18-day training camp once the KHL schedule stops for a one-month Olympic break, but for the most part, you know, the guys that are going to be on the team are playing together right now. So it smacks of the old Soviet system when Viktor Tikhonov was there. This will not be one of those hurry-up, thrown-together kind of Olympic teams. The players that play together will have a real familiarity with them. There will be a team game available. And, you know, I mean, it's Pavel Datsyuk, it's Ilya Kovalchuk. They'll have a good team. You know, they'll have a really good team. So, it's, you know, and Sean wasn't saying, like, it's not like we're afraid of them, but we have to be aware that they are going to be really good. And they are the favorites. They have, you know, they only lose about 45 players out of their player pool, whereas Canada loses, you know, somewhere between 500 and 700, depending on how you evaluate players, based on the, you know, the contracted players in the National Hockey League that are not eligible, the guys that are signed to minor league contracts that are not eligible. So essentially, he's recruiting from players in Europe, and then a few, you know, hoping to maybe get, you know, a couple of kids if he can, and then a few other select guys. And so we eventually got around to Jerome Iginla, and Iginla was in conversation with the national team to possibly play. And, you know, the way it was left was, you know, find a place to play, because we can't just, you know, put you in the lineup for the Olympics if you are not playing up until that point. And I guess he had had some kind of a minor hip procedure, because he had invited to play in the Karjala Cup in early November, and he just isn't healthy enough to do it. So whether or not he recovers in time and whether or not he finds a place to play, I mean, they're prepared to wait until January to see if, A, he finds a place to play, and then, B, if he is a candidate to play for them. They haven't completely ruled it out, but compared to maybe where things were 2 months ago to now, the odds are reduced that Jerome Iginla will be part of the 2018 Olympic team. And, you know, like, I think he would be a really good fit. I know they want to skew young. I know they want to skew fast. But here's a guy that's played in three Olympics, won two gold medals, and I don't think you can ever underestimate the importance of having that presence in that dressing room in South Korea if you're playing in the gold medal game. There's value to that, and they understand that at Team Canada. But, you know, I mean, Jerome has to be healthy. He has to find a place to play. He has to, you know, demonstrate that he can still keep up in a big ice game. So, so that's the update. I mean, he's living in Boston. I don't know if everybody knows that. He and Kara bought a home there. You know, I think partly it was because of all of the stops that he's made since he left Calgary. They really liked it there. And, you know, that all three of their children play hockey. I think that in that that United States Northeastern corridor, there's an awful lot of hockey. You don't have to, you know, be on a travel team that travels, you know, 400 miles when you're in Colorado and other places like that. So I think for family reasons, they settled in Boston. Life is probably pretty good for him, but it will be interesting to see if we ever see him on the ice again. And you know, there's a part of me that would really like to have this, however the path navigates. It would be really cool to see Jerome in the lineup when Canada plays in Pyeongchang in 2018. You just never know, right? You just never know.
Good stuff, my friend. Enjoy your weekend. We will catch up with you next week.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
Eric Dehatchuk from The Athletic joining us down the South Street Burger Guest Hotline. Voted Calgary's best burger 2 years in a row by listeners of Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Now serving local craft beer with daily specials, southstreetburger.com.